Our next guest's been kind enough to spend some time with us this time of year. The last couple of seasons, coincidentally, as Oregon got ready for Stanford this year, it's ASU. He'll be in there with Roxy Bernstein and Lewis Johnson calling the action on the Pac-12 Network. An Iowa Hawkeye. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Big Ant Heron, the pride of Bolingbrook, Illinois. Anthony Heron, great to have you on. How you doing these days, sir?
Steve, I'm outstanding. I'm in the midst of one of the more fun parts of the college football season, and my Cubs are in the World Series, and all is right with the world. I'm doing great, man.
You know, I wanted to mention that before we get to college football. You know, you're an Illinois guy. You got to get our priorities in order. I saw you posted pictures on Twitter of a pop-up stand at O'Hare Airport with all kind of Cub gear. So after game one, Kluber was dominating. Arrieta, huge last night. So now how you feeling about your Cubbies heading back to Wrigley?
Hey, Steve, we stole one on the road. That's what it comes down to. You know, with this World Series format, now that they've gone to this 2-3-2, there's three games in a row in the friendly confines at Wrigley Field. I'm feeling great about where they stand. And I think the Kyle Schwarber story is really interesting because of the fact that, you know, there's the historic possibility here if they would have force-fed him to find a way to keep him into the lineup with the hot bat and, you know, having basically not been in the lineup virtually the entire season and now adding him in here at the World Series. I mean, you know, on the stage of all stages in baseball, and he just came in the first two games. It looked like he'd never missed a beat. But the problem with trying to force feed him into the lineup that Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon have realized, he was really an uncomfortable outfielder already.
Yep.
And now he's got these two flimsy ligaments in his knee. So it's not a position where you want to force the issue to put Kyle Schwarber back out into the outfield to keep that hot bat going, but they still got him as a pinch hitter, still a very deep team. You know, I'm not going to say the World Series is over yet. It's just 1-1. A lot of ball left to play, but overall, I feel good about where my Cubbies sit.
Hey, any chance you can make it to Wrigley for any of these games?
Well, coming back from the game we have Saturday, you know, because of the flight coming out of Eugene, I won't really be able to catch one that'll get me back to Chicago in time for anything Saturday night, but I will be back in town Sunday. If for some reason that happened to be the clinching game, I think the level of mortgage payment that people are, you know, putting on the line to try to get tickets to these games at Wrigley, I'm not sure if that's the direction me and my wife are going to be willing to go. But if I happen to fall into a ticket, you know, perhaps even if you had a listener out there, maybe it's a full night who's tuning in right now and wanted to get me a ticket or two, I'm all for it.
All right. I will keep my ears open, and now you got some other people in your corner. You know, obviously you are here for Duck Sun Devils, but you tweeted a story about Colorado, who's just such a fantastic story, and you were at Iowa during the transition from the Hayden Fry era back in 1999, and obviously Mike McIntyre took a rough situation over in 2013, and you did Buffs ASU a couple weeks ago. Anthony, what have you seen in Boulder that might be similar or maybe remind you of what you experienced that time with the Hawkeyes?
That's a good question, Steve, because for me, the personal experience that I had at the collegiate level and even being a part of, you know, franchises like the Detroit Lions at the NFL level, you know, been a part of rebuilds and fortunately have been a part of some winning as well. Played in bowl games and was with the Falcons in the NFC Championship game. So I've seen both ends of that spectrum. And for me, going back to my college experience, you know, there were some lean years there in Iowa City. One of the things that happened is Hayden Fry was retiring and Kirk Ferentz was taking over. I had 2 years with each guy. I played as a 17-year-old true freshman, kind of similar to DeMario Richard, the running back from Arizona State, who's going to be in here. You know, he's a junior now, but just a couple of years ago, he was a 17-year-old true freshman. I went through that experience that Justin Herbert's going through right now with Iowa. And so you're trying to help pull this program out of the doldrums while you yourself are still this young kid, this sort of immature athlete. You're trying to do everything the right way. You're trying to figure out the college football experience at the major college level. Very difficult thing to do when the coaching position is in some upheaval, when there hasn't been consistency there. And that's where Colorado, who was in, you know, far bigger, you know, more dire situations than I was at when I, you know, join the Iowa Hawkeyes in the mid-90s or, you know, anything that Mark Helfrich, I believe, is going through right now at Oregon. Colorado was, you know, they weren't doormat, and they were doormat for quite some time when McIntyre took them over. And you've just seen that roster grow and mature, and players who were getting blown out by 5 and 6 touchdowns just a couple of seasons back are now in a position where they're bigger, faster, stronger, and they've got that extra heartbeat that they're playing with now because they've been waiting for this moment. They've been yearning to become a great football team, and now they're finally there on the precipice of, you know, trying to win a South Division championship. And so that's why week in, week out, Colorado plays with what I call an extra heartbeat, because they've been through the doldrums and they've had these tough losses that have built this sort of hard shell around them.
We're talking with Anthony Herron, Pac-12 analyst. You've been a part of the team who's actually called the last couple Arizona State games. The blowout against Colorado last week's, I called it the love fest against Washington State. That offense, okay points-wise last week, but under 300 total yards. They've got injuries at quarterback, offensive line. Are they just beat up? I mean, how would you evaluate this Sun Devil attack right now?
With Arizona State, for me, it's twofold, because they're very beat up at the quarterback position. They do have a couple of key guys nicked up in some other spots. But, you know, quarterback just blows everything away as far as the depth of the injuries that Arizona State is experiencing. You know, they've been down to their number 4 QB on the depth chart. They started the preseason with a 3-man battle between Manny Wilkins, Brady White, and Bryce Perkins. And Manny Wilkins right now is the only guy who's still even attempting to be in the lineup, both Brady White and likely Bryce Perkins out for the season at this point. But Dylan Sterling Cole is a freshman quarterback who excites me. Even, you know, it's Arizona State's best opportunity if Manny Wilkins is on the field. But Dylan Sterling Cole has an extremely live arm, and he came in a similar fashion to Justin Herbert and looked fairly comfortable in his first extended action. He hasn't gotten a start yet, but he looked pretty comfortable on the field to me. And there's things that he and his offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey, have been able to go and evaluate the film this week and just tell them, hey, if you anticipate the ball, you know, out to this spot outside the hashes, then you got a better shot at this completion. If you take a little bit of steam off the football with this amazing arm talent you have, you don't have to throw it as hard as you can every single time. I'm very curious to see what a Dylan Sterling Cole would look like making a first career start at this point, especially where maybe there's a little bit of pressure that would be off of him at this point in the season. Like I said, Manny Wilkins, their best bet at quarterback. He's as gritty and as determined as they come. He's been playing through injuries for about a month now. But if Dylan Sterling Cole is in the lineup for ASU, I certainly wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't anticipate the Oregon defense should relax. It'll be a different type of attack, maybe an attack that would throw the ball deeper down the field and try to take advantage of some explosive opportunities.
Now, over to Oregon, you called the game at Washington State when they gave up the most rush yards the Cougs had in a decade. Then they got crushed by Washington. Of course, they rallied to make a game of it last week. They've got youth, injuries, new coordinator, new scheme, and you mentioned relaxing. I don't think anybody on the Oregon defense is relaxing. What kind of troubles are you seeing on that side of the ball, and how logical is it they can, you know, fix this anytime soon?
Well, one of the things that struck me a bit early in watching this film from the game last week versus Cal were some of the mental errors that took place. I mean, you know, it's easy to sit here and just think about, you know, whether or not the guys played hard enough. I think there were some mental errors that were out there that are very correctable. You know, some things on those run-pass options. And, you know, the RPOs that Cal runs, the Bears, are very different than what you'll see from a team like Oregon and what you see from an Arizona State, because the quarterback in Davis Webb isn't as big of a running threat. But even the route combination of the wide receivers can still be something that confuses you in the moment, because Davis Webb is an experienced quarterback who can make decisions in a split second. And he took advantage of that throughout the first half. What I like, though, that I saw from the Oregon defense was that the game went on, and especially once the offense gave them a bit of a spark, you saw the defense force some punch. You saw the defensive front hitting blocks a little bit more effectively, and so they made Cal a little bit more one-dimensional. They forced some punts, some turnover on downs, forced some field goal attempts, those types of things. So for their defensive front, I believe one thing they need to make sure they do is to try and condense the running lanes on Saturday against Arizona State, because the Todd Graham offense is at its best when they can lead with the running attack and then just set up some play-action opportunities, some ball handling in the backfield, and maybe pick up some chunk plays where the defense has to bite down. So it's a thin defensive line for Oregon right now. I understand that. But they can't just try to go flying up the field at every opportunity because they've made the second level of the defense have more ground to cover. This defensive front on rundowns, they got to hit blocks, condense holes, and then put the linebackers in a better position to be able to fill downhill. Now, there have been a few moments. I'm not putting it all on the D-line. I'm an old D-lineman myself. The linebackers have had some misfits here as well. But that, to me, is where the battle really needs to be waged for Oregon. The proper fits, consistently, the proper fits in the run game. Then on the back end, we'll see what happens with Arian Springs on the outside because at corner, he was a guy I was very excited about early in the season. I thought he was playing really well, you know, sort of for lack of a better term, would kind of panic a little bit with the ball in flight, even though he would be in great position, the hip pocket of the receiver, and then he would just sort of freak out with the ball there at what I call the moment of truth when the ball's on the way in, and he'd pick up a flag as opposed to just getting his head around and playing the ball there to get a deflection. So he's regressed a bit over the last couple of weeks, so I'll be curious to see, and I'll get a chance to talk to Brady Hoke tomorrow about how that rotation outside at corner is going to work out this week.
Now, we mentioned Justin Herbert a little earlier. You know, he debuts against the best team in the conference with that tenacious Washington defense. The first time I saw him out there, it's like I don't think I could have been any more basic. I was like, he looks like he belongs on a Pac-12 field. From what you've seen, who you've spoken to, I mean, how excited should Oregon fans be about this kid?
Oh, the future is very bright. The future is very bright for the Ducks at the quarterback position. And Justin Herbert is out there and is able to stay healthy, be in the lineup. For a young player in the position he was in last week, you know, on the road, while it's not the most intimidating atmosphere in the Pac-12 Conference, you're still on the road. You're down by three touchdowns multiple times in that game. So you're three scores down. Your offense isn't moving the ball. And what they actually did was they put the ball in his hands. Matt Lubick and Mark Helfrich, they said, let's go ahead and air it out. Let's trust these freshmen up front on the offensive line. And out of any position group, I've maybe been most impressed with the offensive line. While they've been porous at times, but when you think about the fact that the majority of the season, they've started four freshmen up front, and they've been able to protect the quarterback fairly well. They've opened up some run lanes when they've needed to. Are they one of the better O-lines in the Pac-12 Conference yet? No. But this is a group, I believe, this offensive line with these four freshmen, they're going to be able to build around this group moving forward. So I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm pleased with the way the O-line has played for where they're at in their development. I think that's something they can continue to build off of. And then they just put it on the O-line and Justin Herbert as a thrower of the football. He was able to lead them back into the game. So you combine that with the fact that as a guy 6'5", 6'6", still kind of wiry in his frame, but he's a willing runner of the football, I think the sky's the limit for him as a playmaker.
Big Ant, Anthony Herron, joining us. We really appreciate your time and insight, as always. He'll be alongside Roxy Bernstein with Lewis Johnson as part of the Pac-12 Network call of Oregon ASU. Hey, we really appreciate when you take some time to stop by. You enjoy your stay here in Eugene. And A, travel safe, and B, I hope you score some tickets for the World Series.
From your lips to God's ears, Steve, on that one. That would be great. And just so you know, there's a Papa's Soul Food restaurant that's somewhere I'm going to go. The Pac-12 Network, they've been using the hashtag AntBite and having people vote on the Twitter poll each week. And the voters picked the Papa's Soul Food restaurant this week. So I'm going to be eating there tomorrow and maybe talking some Pac-12 football with the patrons there.
That would be awesome. That's down in the Whitaker neighborhood. It's terrific. Great stuff. And enjoy your meal, Ant.
Looking forward to it, Steve. Thanks, buddy.
All right, take it easy. Anthony Herron on Twitter, at Big Ant Herron. You can see wherever he's been doing games, he's thrown that hashtag out, and he's taking pictures. Where's he having some good brisket? Now he's going for some soul food. And this guy takes big bites out of life. Always appreciate him stopping by and making a great, happy, positive contribution to the program.
What was that show on the Food Network, Man vs. Food or whatever, with Adam Richman or something like that? That was a great show. He's basically doing that at some of these places. He's taking on pretty big deals in terms of food.
It's actually worth it. Go to his Twitter feed and see all the suggestions he's getting, obviously from around here, but from his travels to, I think, when they were in Boulder and just everywhere they've gone covering games this year.